And the first docket had one single veteran show up, and I think the docket was 5 or 6 people, and no one who was homeless showed up that day. And I wasn't sure anyone was going to show up that day. The veteran came in very late, right at the end. So in contrast, this morning, obviously, what is the community support docket? And for anyone that doesn't know, it addresses individuals that are veterans and individuals that are homeless. And when I say homeless, I mean cars, couch surfing, hotel rooms, literally on the streets, unsheltered. Not just literally on the streets, unsheltered. We had 69 separate individuals on that docket this morning. They were all homeless, as far as I could tell, and no veterans. 11 people were in jail. And then, to give you an idea, recently we've had as many as over 100 individuals on that docket. And so that's a big change over 8 years of what is kind of occurring. Obviously, this is a connection point for services, and I ask each person to address the top 3 things that they need right now. And that can be pre-plea, post-plea, probation, or at all stages of the process. Obviously, individual groups and places come. Divert, New Horizons, VA, Burrell, Love, Inc., Turning Point are just examples. But like I said, the volume has increased dramatically lately. And I'm very cognizant to try to be mindful, because everyone is coming to this docket, and expanding it would be somewhat difficult without absorbing a lot more individuals and groups' time. And so what we've been doing recently on these dockets where they've been so large, we are just doing cleanup the next day, and we're going into lunch. And so to give you an example today, which was a smaller docket, not one of those big ones, we probably were 15 minutes into the lunch hour. But on some of these days, we're 30 minutes into the lunch hour and then cleaning up for an hour the next day. And so I think that's the right way to handle it, because I want to make sure we're utilizing our time appropriately. And it's been a little bit of a rant, but I do want you to be aware that we're pushing the capacity of that as it is envisioned. And it is much, I talk pretty fast, right? And I talk really, really fast at that docket to try to make sure we get through it. And that's not really what you want to necessarily do. You're trying to spend enough time to encourage people and make sure that they're being heard. And so you've got to remember, I just want you to be aware. I've seen some very positive outcomes on the docket, both individuals that are newly homeless and individuals that are homeless for long periods. I can anecdotally tell you that we had an individual that had been homeless 6 to 10 years on the streets and had been on the docket 3 times. But on that 3rd time, he quit drinking and got housing. And to me, that was a very unusual event and very positive. I wish it hadn't taken 3 times, but 3rd time was the charm. So something to think about. The divert expansion. I think this has been a very valuable addition. Individuals falling out spheres of services of other agencies, helping individuals with low capacity and understanding, helping individuals just navigate the difficulties of all the things that either are or are not available to them has been critically important. Working with the prosecutor and the police officers to have better results, and so the prosecutor knows ahead of time. One of the ways we do that too is we try to put positive results at the beginning of the docket, and so the prosecutor knows ahead of time through divert and is able to tell that to the clerk, so we can pull those up front and then bring those positive experiences to kind of, for people that have not been there before and are really scared or nervous, can see a good result. And that's really helped. Project Homeless Connect, I did attend, the court attends, and it does lead to positive interactions for people that are already on the community support docket to acknowledge that we're there. And many more people that are homeless tend to have a greater level of trust because we are there. And this is the first time we did this. We did recall a warrant for someone. Divert team had brought them up. They were terrified, of course. Of course, the police officers are just a few tables down. Of course, we were able to do that. And that was one of the reasons we had the clerk there, and we have this case net. So in addition to do that, so now that's the good part, right? Now, the sad part was, I made them promise they've got to show up for community support docket, and individual did not keep their promise. And so, of course, I issued new warrants. And this time it wasn't cash surety or 10%. This time it was cash only. Now, that doesn't mean that individual can't come back to me and re-engage. But there has to be consequences, and we have to have a structure to it, both positively and sadly sometimes negatively. Property services docket. This has also been expanded and it has continued to be held once a month, first Tuesday. We've backed that time up 30 minutes because there were so many property services things on that docket. And so I wanted to give the prosecutor more time to discuss those issues and try to solve those problems. And so this is another example of a problem solving docket. And clearly, the more problem solving that can occur on these type of situations, the less reoccurrence you're going to have. And also, I think the better overall outcomes, including for future outcomes.
Can you give me an example?
Sure.
Can you give me an example of that property?
Sure. So it could be junk in the yard or an unlicensed vehicle or weeds that are too long or an elderly individual that really can't take care of the gutters or anything that you can think about in property maintenance code. So if it has to do with property, we're putting on the docket. Now, the community support docket is a little more court driven. This is a little more prosecutor driven. And so what I do is I kind of go in and say, this is voluntary. I go over the rights with everybody. I arraign them just like we do on the community support docket. But then I say, if you don't want to be here, I'll put you on a Norman docket. But if you'd like to work on this and work with the prosecutor and city staff, then I'm going to step out just like we do at second call. But it gives them a lot more time. And then all of the property services staff are there to help engage and give up-to-date facts to the prosecutor versus having to try to gather that information later. So it's a much more streamlined process. I think more helpful to individuals as well. It also actually is beneficial to corporations. So corporations to participate in municipal court have to have attorneys, but this is giving them a mechanism before they really go down that path to kind of get a resolution without that extra expense. So it's also positive in that sense as well.
Okay, thanks.
Yes.
Do issues coming from rental complaints come to this?
So it would have to, but only tangentially, right? So it has to be a rental complaint that is a property maintenance issue that then gets triggered, that's an ordinance violation, because we don't have really, does that make, that
no,
answer
it does.
Question?
Okay. I know exactly which group will go through that route. What I want to know is how often do that group of issues come and don't get resolved? How often do they stay in the courts or repeat?
So I have no way of knowing. And here's, you got to remember, it's the strangest thing. I know such limited facts because I only get to hear facts two times. I get to hear facts if you plead guilty. I always tell everybody, I'm happy to listen to anything you have to say and I'll take it into account as to the proper punishment. Or if you go to a trial, or one more, if there's a bond, if they're asking for a bond, I get some basic facts to take into account. There's a set of things we go through to determine what the right bond amount is. So yeah. I actually don't know, only tangentially sometimes do I hear some of those facts right at the end of a guilty plea or something like that. And so if it's a deferral or a dismissal, I'm never going to hear those facts at all.
Yeah. So if the same party pleads guilty on the same or similar offense more than once, is that something that you would be aware of? And do we
sometimes
have a mechanism for escalating
so
fees?
The prosecutor is going to usually make me aware of that, right? And you got to remember, in every single case, the prosecutor is going to recommend a fine. Based on, they're always going to know more information than I do.
Yeah.
And they're going to give me the basic facts and the information and a recommendation on the fine. And obviously, if there's some bad facts or priors, they're going to mention that. And then, of course, I'm going to also listen to the defendant and ask them, do you think that recommendation is fair? And if they tell me no, I'm going to say, well, tell me why, right?
Yeah.
That seems fair. Get both sides. And then I'm going to make a decision somewhere between those facts without knowing really, right, what all the truth is, because it's not a trial. Obviously, if you go to a trial, I see a lot more information, right, than versus a brief set of facts right there at the plea. And so, yes, can I take that into account and do I? Sure. Let me give you an example, just like on a bond.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, different bonds are more or less serious facts. And so if it's a more set of serious facts, I'm going to have a higher bond, right? I'm going to have a higher bond for a DWI than I am for a parking ticket. I mean, that makes sense, right? But if you get enough parking tickets, 20 plus or something ridiculous, right? You're going to have a pretty high pod. Clearly, you have not gotten the message, right? And sometimes it's a matter of, you know, taking into all those circumstances. And it's really as it comes.
Can I ask one more question?
One more. Sorry. And then I'm going to get back. I promise we'll have, I want to give everybody a fair shot of questions at the end, too. Go ahead.
This will be my last
one. Oh, no. You don't have to have a last one.
How often do they go to trial? Do you have a perspective on that?
Very rarely. Many more cases get set for trial than trials that actually go. And there's vast differences between pro se trials and attorney trials, mm-hmm. And different kinds of cases. Less than 5% for sure, and probably more like one sometimes. But you've got to talk about a large amount of volume to them.
Thank you. That's been enlightening.
No worries. So the court still has a high turnover rate. We recently hired 3 new employees. The court's 4-day work week is really important, and it's really helped bring people in. Some of the employees we have would not otherwise be working there without that 4-day work week. And again, I also think that that's really important in the sense that that is what allows us to have these expanded hours, which is 7:30 to 5:30, so 4 days a week, plus 2 night courts. Now, the exempt people don't have 4-day work weeks. We get to hang out. But what that allows, and it's critically important to some people. It's not utilized a lot for a lot of people, but for the individuals that it is important to, particularly night court, and particularly being able to come in when they're not working or not going to school, really does matter for some people. That otherwise, I think they would have to take a vacation day if they can take a vacation day, or maybe lose their job. And I think it's important to have those. But I do want to say that I am my staff that are doing the 4-hour work weeks, they all like it and all have had a better quality of life and have told us that that's an important aspect. We are going to discontinue the legacy JustWare system. So hopefully in February will be your last JustWare report. You know how you get 2 different reports, and it will just be the new Show Me Courts report. And that's because we have 1 bond left that's lingering. And so we'll clean that up, hopefully. Now, if another bond or something weird comes in, we'll drag it out another time. But that should be the end of that. Judge Briscoe will be up for reappointment in May. And so just wanted to make you aware of that. And then budget-wise, we have 8.75 FTE, including myself. We're currently operating with 7. 1 was just a retirement with our court analyst recently. And obviously, the caseloads are increasing. It's important to note and remind you that we have no control over our caseloads. It's truly a matter of resources that management puts towards enforcement of ordinance violations, not only from the police department, but all the other departments. And as I'm sure you're aware, CPD has been able to fill a lot of their positions, and there has been increases. I'm not planning on making any cuts to municipal court, but as we see these increases in inflows, I'll hire the rest of our people, and then I'll move to temporaries after that to fill any gaps as we have increases. And then obviously, hopefully that will give me enough room that if we have a surge, right, then I can come back to you next year and say, oh, I filled everybody, I've got my temporaries, and now what's the next stop? We're not there yet. Yes.
Good. I just want to be clear. Are you leaving some positions open?
I used to be doing that. I have 1 position that I'm still holding, like, in that fashion of, we're not quite to that volume yet, but a couple years ago, I was holding 3 like that.
And you sort of answered the question I had about the increase in the number of cases that you've had. And do you have a way do you have any data sets that would give you an indication of how much the increase in policing in terms of the hiring there has had an impact on the court, or is that just too elusive a number?
So I have very limited data sets. My data sets I can get from the Supreme Court. So they do it yearly. And it's not with CPD, right? Because it's off kilter. And it also doesn't include what CPD sends to state. And it doesn't calculate then how many other murders or felonies or also CPDs are working on. So, but I can anecdotally tell you that based on those records, certainly we were being underutilized versus a long time ago where there was a lot more cases. And I told you that a few years ago. But then you saw a doubling last year after but it was the pandemic. So you have this drop. Then you have it got lower. Then you had a double. And now we're had another 700 cases. And you got to remember, if she was able to put a real traffic unit and a DWI units back out there, they could probably do double the double. Yeah. Or if they doubled that, it could be 10x. I mean, it's truly a matter of, if you just have somebody doing traffic tickets all day, you can do a lot of tickets. If you focus on downtown, so when that downtown enforcement was occurring, those were surges in cases because they're seeing more jaywalking. They're seeing more MIPs. They're seeing more other things that are occurring because they're right there. So that's causing, it truly is, if you have more focus on housing and more individuals in that area, you're going to have more cases. If the fire department decides to write tickets for overcrowding or fire violations, and that becomes a new thing, you're going to get more ticket. I mean, it truly is a matter of resource to resource.
Okay.
And I don't know an answer for you. Let's see. Oh, yeah. So about 675 new cases over last year. I do want to go over briefly the citizen survey because it's one of the few markers that we have. So I'm going to write. I don't like how they did it in this section because it actually doubles some of the things that aren't really true. And let me explain why I think that. If you go back to this little text that shows you the...
Can you say what you're pointing at?
Yes.
Gray boxes and green boxes.
So... This is the citizen survey. One's from page 16, and it tells us about the treatment and fairness in municipal court. But the one I want to focus on was actually from page 84. And this is also the same question with the data broken out. But here's why it matters. The first one does not include don't know, whereas the other one does. And it gives a warped perception of what this is, because for me, don't know really matters. I would like 100% of people to not know about municipal court, right? That would be much better. But to give you an example, this is why I think the breakdown matters for us, is in addition to 46% of the people not knowing, which is fine, 7% were very satisfied, which I was a little surprised at. 15% were satisfied, 25% were neutral, 3.7% were dissatisfied, and 2.7% were very dissatisfied. This is municipal court. You know, I'm a little happily surprised by that. But that's a lot different than it appears on that front page where it looks like it's 13, 28, 47, and 12. I don't like the feel of it. I think this is a more honest answer back here on the other page for yourselves.
So Kavanaugh, for the person who did the surveys, not me, but the person, I will say the one question he had is like, well, do you want them rating you if they don't know who you are? And so that was, we kind of had that back and forth. I'm just letting you know that.
And in all fairness, maybe this only matters to me because not everyone has an interaction with municipal court, whereas a lot of other departments, everybody has an interaction, but maybe they just don't know one way or the other, right? Maybe I'm splitting hairs, but I thought I would mention it to you because
you're special.
Thanks. It just bugged me a little, so yeah. I thought I'd mention it.
It's still pretty good.
No, it's still good. It's still good. So that was my short update. Do you have other questions that I can answer before you guys want to go into closed session?
Questions for Kavanaugh. Yeah, Nick.
I'm interested in, you gave some of the numbers where you started and where we've been most recently. So I'm curious about the time in between. Can you speak to what you think the reason is that we're seeing more people in the community
short
docket? For instance, I know that in the unsheltered community, there's a lot of word of mouth. And I wonder if you have a good reputation, there, for instance? But you may not be able to answer that exactly, but I wonder if you have an idea.
So I can answer that a little bit, and only anecdotally. Yeah. And so there's two parts to this. One part is I have had people come up to me both on the street and at other places and talk to me about thank you and telling me that I'm a nice person and appreciating that I was taking the time to listen to them. The one that got me the most was just recently when we were at the Project Homeless Connect. I had an individual who was not in my court, but she had helped a friend who was also homeless turn herself in. And she came up to me at Project Homeless Connect and say, look, I've been involved in the justice system many, many, many times, and I had absolutely no faith in it. But I did have hope and some faith that the justice system could work for someone like me when I brought my friend in the other day. And so to me, that kind of answers part of your question of, I think that it took a long time, 8 years ago, right? And then it took a long time to kind of earn that trust, to know that if you walked in the courtroom with a warrant, I wasn't gonna throw you right in jail. And that this was real, that we were gonna try this new kind of process. Now, I think some of the volume issues is not just that, though. It's CPD putting individuals for a specific purpose of engagement with homelessness, both in the parks and other places. That's what's causing the volume surge. So obviously, it's just a matter, if you have more connections and more interactions and there are more warrants, that causes more cases to go to a specific, in this case, that docket. Now, the good news is people are appearing.
They're showing up.
Right. We've had, like on the ice storm day, when we had that really horrible ice storm a long time ago, I had more individuals on my homeless docket show up that day than I did on my Raymond dockets. But it also, they care. And it was hard for me to walk to work. I mean, so it's just one of those things. I hope that helps.
Can I ask, excuse me, and we've talked about this a little bit, you know, 2 years ago, the state of the court, you were like, my caseloads are really low because sure. We don't have any enforcement. And I think I asked at the time, does that mean these things aren't happening?
I wish that was true, but I don't think that's true.
And so I think that's my question now, when you're like, we have more officers in these spaces enforcing these things, like, is it not happening? Like,
no, let me give you a great example. So I think Jill has attempted to make some changes where she had officers doing individual contacts, at least two contacts. They didn't have to give tickets, but they had to have contacts or something like that. Well, that saw a huge boost in speeding tickets. And we're not talking about low speeds. We're talking, you know, 25, 30 over on Scott Boulevard, Rock Quarry, Business Loop, school zone violations like no one's business. I can just tell you, when I drive my very short commute to work, I see violations in that amount of time. So the answer is not that there are not violations. And we're not talking about over-policing. We're talking about putting those resources to getting things calmed back down. I think the pandemic was really terrible for the idea that I'm going to go as fast as the next person. Well, then that person goes faster and that person goes faster. And all of a sudden you look around and everybody's lost their mind. Yeah. And what's a stop sign anymore? Does that?
Yeah. Yeah.
Absolutely. And same thing with DWIs. We don't have a DWI unit. We haven't had a DWI unit. I wish there was less DWIs. I really doubt it.
All right, any other questions for Kavanaugh? Yeah, Vera.
You mentioned that the docket is pretty much at capacity or close to capacity.
Close
to capacity as it was envisioned.
Yes.
Do you have ideas for how to re-envision it if it continues growing like we've seen?
So I would have to ask all those people that come and attend and say, well, how much more time can you give me? Because obviously it doesn't really work as well if everybody doesn't attend, or we would have to really, really lean on DIVRT. And DIVRT would have to be like the clearinghouse instead of just help connect, get to the right, are you eligible for this? Are you eligible for that? And then take over for the people that aren't eligible for anything. And so I'm hopeful, right, that we don't need more capacity, because that's a pretty, so if we have over 100 people on the docket and the last point in time count was 300 something, was that correct? Do you know what the last year's was?
Point in time count, what we were just talking about.
It was on tonight's report.
It's no. I'm talking about last year's. I don't think there's
last year's. I don't think it got that high. Somewhere around 200.
So let's say it was two something.
Yeah,
285.
That means I have a third of the people that are homeless on my docket. Right? So I'm hoping I don't have 100% of the people on my docket.
Yeah.
Any other questions for Kevin? All right, we're going to move into, make a motion to a closed session. So I move that the City Council of the City of Columbia, Missouri, to immediately go into a closed meeting here in Conference Room 1A and 1B of City Hall to discuss legal actions, causes of action, or litigation involving a public governmental body.
So I think you guys will have a closed session with me first.
Between a public governmental body and representative, and its attorneys pursuant to Section 610.0211 of the Revised Statutes of Missouri, leasing, purchase, or sale of real estate by a public governmental body where public knowledge of the transaction might adversely affect the legal consideration. Therefore, pursuant to Section 610.0212 of the Revised Statutes of Missouri, the hiring, firing, disciplining, or promoting a particular employee by a public governmental body with personal information about the employees discussed or recorded pursuant to Section 610.